Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, it's Weird Islanders, the podcast, back once again for our third season of fun. My name is Dan, that is Mike. How are you this evening, Mike?
I'm doing great, excited to get into this Weird Islander. Always fun to talk about the fishermen teams. we've had a couple already, and another one tonight, and I would say one fisherman episode was happy. With that being the Wendell Clark episode, although it got a little onerous with the ornery with the Maple Leafs Islanders stuff, but still fun. And then one was very sad, that being the Kirk Muller episode. Angry, a lot of anger, a lot of catharsis. But this one, I think, will kind of be just weird, which is the ethos of the show.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. I'm looking forward to this. This was definitely a surprising pick, and our guest can explain why he went with this player. Everybody knows our guest. You know him from ESPN. You know him from his pioneering Puck Daddy blog. You know him from his many, many podcasts, or you just know him from Islanders Twitter. He is the one and only Greg Wyshynski. Greg, how are you this evening?
Yeah, I mean, if you're online, you know me. I don't know about like the real world. You know what I mean? Like when I get like weird, when I'm walking around New York and I get like a weird glance from somebody who like recognizes me, it's most definitely somebody on the internet that is doing that. I can look them up and down and tell you that they are not going to Fashion Week. They are very much on the internet. Thank you for the lovely greeting. So happy to be on an Islanders podcast, and I'm sure all the Islanders fans are so happy to hear me on an Islanders podcast.
Don't worry, you're in a safe place. We're okay here. We're all friends here. We will talk about the current Islanders team probably a little bit towards the end, but actually it's funny you mentioned the real world. I should tell you, I am coming to you from Old Bridge, New Jersey, near your original hood. So
I grew up in Mattawan, which is the town next to Old Bridge.
Yes.
I know Old Bridge as one, a town that had the only ice rink near me growing up. And then also as the town that I drive through to get to White Castle, where I also drive through. and then I take my burgers back through Old Bridge and to Mattawan.
I know the exact White Castle that you're talking about. And I have gone there, but because it's New Jersey and we have those jug handle turns, getting back to my house from that White Castle is such a huge pain in the ass that it negates the trip to White Castle itself. So I have not done it in many years, and I don't want to do it again. And every time there's like a new strip mall or something going up, I'm like, please build a White Castle here. Please.
It never happens. But there's one right there on Route 9 in, I guess it's like, it's what, near the Amboys or whatever.
Yes.
It's the one I always used to go to. It's open late. I've gotten Crave cases from there with my friends and eaten them in like the parking lot.
Nice.
And it's also, you know, canonically, the White Castle that my dad and I would hit up before going to games at the Meadowlands, and not necessarily Devils games all the time. It was usually Nets games when the Nets played there, because there was actually a White Castle meal where for like $100 you got four tickets and I think four White Castle meals or something like that. I mean, this is, again, this is your Mookie Blaylock Nets, you know, where they're just begging you to come see Sacramento on a Tuesday.
Prompting you with greasy, spongy, steamed hamburgers.
Yeah. I mean, the siren song of a slider.
Exactly.
But yeah, that White Castle, a big influence on a young Greg Wyshynski's life.
Amazing.
It's the downside of all the wonderful success the Islanders have had since that their former captain left is that those kind of deals are now gone. You know, you can't just walk into Nassau Coliseum with a fake student ID and get in for $5 anymore and buy an energy drink from an energy drink company that went bankrupt while the promotion was still going on, and just use that can to get into an Islander game,
right?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's like the Islanders were having like canned food, you know, soup drives all season long. It's like if you just brought random shit to an Islander game, they just would assume like, oh, we must be doing a promotion. Yeah. Come on in, see them play the Lightning.
Give you tickets to another game like 2 months later, right? Yeah. Which is even better.
Thanks for showing up. The security guards are going to feast on these chunky soup, and before that, you guys can come back to see them play John Shabesh and Jaguar and the Anaheim Ducks.
So, like, one of the things I've always said about the Islanders, and I think I mentioned this in the column I wrote during the Tavares stuff when he came back, was like, as much as I've had heat with Islanders fans through the years, like, there's a certain understanding and kinship between the Devils and the Islanders franchises being
the enemy of your
class citizens and doing weird things to try to get people to come to games. And, you know, I mean, and in the case of like the Brendan Byrne and Nassau, like trying to get them to come to places that people shouldn't go.
Right. Yeah, seriously. Oh, man. The Meadowlands. If you've ever walked over the New Jersey Turnpike on that, like, wrought iron, plywood, driftwood, you know, corrugated ceiling walkway. It was like taking a life in your hands. But as Mike and I will know, if you've ever ran across what is it? Is that what boulevard was that? Where like you had Nassau,
Charles Lindbergh. Yeah.
Charles Lindbergh, I mean, yeah.
All the roads around the Coliseum were dangerous, whether it's Lindbergh or the Turnpike. It was just like none of the traffic lights ever were working. Right. And it was cold and dark and the Islanders sucked, and it's just, you know, it's not fun.
But you would do anything to save on parking fees, basically.
Yeah, exactly. That was the best part of it. It was the only sports franchise that never figured out that people were still parking all over the place. Like, nobody's at the game, but there's a lot of people at Kellenberg High School.
The rickety bridge that was just referenced is one that it connected the parking lots at Brendan Byrne, which you had to get to like hella early to get a space. Yeah. Or you had to be like a preferred parker type deal. And then you take the bridge went to Giant Stadium, basically, which was where the overflow parking was for games. And, you know, basically unless you were playing, you know, Ottawa, you know, during the week, like you had to park by Giant Stadium because there's like actually going to be fans there. So that the bridge had planks missing, you know, underneath your feet, like
it was treacherous.
It had this sort of like siding on the walls to protect you from like the whipping winds. otherwise push you into oncoming traffic.
Yeah. Right.
And then, but the cool thing was if you banged on those, like the sound would reverberate through the entire bridge. Like they were so loud, and you just walk through it on the way back to your car after a win, and you just hear people going bump, 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 bump. and the sound would like echo through East Rutherford.
Right.
Yeah. That's really funny. I mean, it's like the honking horns at Islander games. One of my favorite things about going to games at Nassau Coliseum too is you just would walk into random players for the opposing teams too. Oh, yeah. Like they were fighting the wind too. You'd be like, oh, look, there's, you know, Anders Lindback or someone. And you'd be like, God damn, like what he's walking the same walk as I am because he's coming from the Marriott and like he got lost. Maybe he was going to Chipotle across the street or something. But like you said, there is definitely a kinship. I was at a game down the stretch last year. I was at this last Devils Islanders game on Friday, but last year, a big game for the Islanders. And during the intermission, one of my friends that I was at the game with had Devils fan friends that were also at the game. And it was so cordial because all we were talking to them about was like, you guys got to beat the fucking Rangers. Like, you guys got to beat them in the playoffs. Like, please just make sure you take care of them. And they were like, yeah, you know, we will. And look, if they beat us and they play you in the second round somehow, like, you guys got to take care of them. And that's all it was. And it is true enemy of your enemy kind of stuff. And there's just nothing there. Yeah. No ill will. It could change, of course, with if these two teams ever meet in a playoff series.
I was going to say, but one playoff series changes everything, obviously. But as for right
then
now,
I'm going to try to kidnap Jack Hughes and things change. Yeah. But
we're all going to be tracking flights to and from Newark to see where the team is at and everything. Before we get into tonight's Weird Islander, though, I do have to ask you a question, because not only are we all hockey fans here, but we are also all fans of Bravo's fantastic competition show, Top Chef. You
love
do a
it.
Podcast about it. So if you had to pick one Top Chef contestant to manage an NHL team, who would it be?
I should say the podcast you referenced is called Mise en Pod, that my wife Ruby and I do on the Puck Soup Patreon. It's a monthly podcast, unless Top Chef is in season, in which case it's a weekly podcast. And we cover every episode of every season. It's pretty fun. I would pick Stefan, and I don't remember what season he was on.
That was season 5, because you stole my pick, but go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's totally the pick. Like, that guy reads very sort of like a European coach that comes to the NHL and tries to do his best behind the bench dealing with North American players. but he's also very like egotistical and temperamental as well. Yeah. So like a swaggery dick of a coach. Yeah. Like a John Tortorella in Matt Sundin's body, and he'd be my pick.
Yeah. Mike, who would you go with?
I'd go with Angela. And he would coach the New Jersey Devils, because he looks very New Jersey.
Yeah.
And that would it's a gut pick more than anything. I think he'd probably not last very long.
Yeah.
But maybe he would get another job and become infinitely more likable in that second gig. and we'd all be rooting for him.
I was going to say Stefan too, because he's my favorite type of reality show person, in that he's a huge jerk, but he's also really good. And he made it all the way to the finals because he was really awesome. And you wanted to hate him, but you'd be like, man, he's just so good. Also, he's a dead ringer for Jarmo Kekalainen. So I figure if people
that's who he looks like. He looks like Jarmo. Yeah, you're right.
Think they're dealing with Jarmo, so he might get away with stuff. Also, you know, if the season continues the way it's going, Jarmo might be working for him by the end. So we'll have to see how that. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Top Chef or New Jersey White Castles or treacherous ways to cross the New Jersey Turnpike. We're here to talk about a specific Weird Islander who you have chosen. So, Greg Wyshynski, will you please reveal the subject of tonight's episode of Weird Islanders, the podcast?
Yeah, that Weird Islander is, of course, a devil, Alexander C-Mac.
Incredible. I love this pick, because people are going to see your name on here and be like, oh, that's cool. And then they're going to see Alex C-Mac's name here and be like, who? Which is the exact reaction that I want from these things. Before we get into...
Hey, look. I know that we've got to get going on this show, but I got to admit, I had no fucking idea this guy was an Islander.
Well, yeah, that's the whole point.
That's
the whole point of the show. The show kind of was born out of, hey, you know what people don't realize or remember? That Chris Osgood was on the New York Islanders and wore his red pads, you know, like that kind of, you know, and of that thought, a podcast was born. And now we're here talking about Alexander C-Mac in season 3.
I mean, we've had episodes about people I didn't even know were Islanders, and I made the list. So it's kind of show this is. But reminder that we are on Patreon, patreon.com/islandersanxiety. You get ad-free episodes of this show, plus bonus podcasts, written posts, all kinds of stuff. Plans start as low as $2 a month. So sign up, patreon.com/islandersanxiety. Okay, so we always start with the basic question of the choices that were given to you. Why Alex C-Mac? Because I showed you a bunch of devils, and he was the one you went with. So why him?
Yeah, I was definitely going to pick a devil, obviously. I went with him because he's a guy who played for the Devils in a real kind of formative time for me. Like, my first year being a hockey fan was 88, the first time the Devils made the playoffs. That was the like that playoff run was the first time I really got into watching them and kind of living and dying with your team, which has been something I've said for years, which is like the only way you can really make a new hockey fan in, you know, Columbus or Sunrise is if you've got to live and die with your team in the playoffs. And that's what happened to me. And I was like minted. So from that point on, I was into the Devils, and that sort of 91 to 94 stretch before they started, you know, challenging in the playoffs and losing to the Rangers, then winning the cup and stuff, is a real sort of formative time for me. It was still, they were still wearing the Christmas tree jerseys, I think. they had this weird amalgamation of young guys that never really amounted to too much, but then also Scott Stevens. Like it's a really interesting time to have been a Devils fan. And as you got going a little bit, you could start to see the pieces being put in place where, you know, all of a sudden now, you know, like Niedermeyer showing up and Billy Guerin showing up, and they're there with like, you know, Bernie Nichols. You know, it's a weird kind of mishmash of veteran guys and younger guys, but also the building blocks for what would become a championship team, of which C-Mac, you know, ended up not being, but but he was there anyway for a little bit.
Yeah. And so we'll get to his Islanders season in a few minutes, but his time with the Devils was really interesting. We'll talk about his big season too in a minute, but you know, he was one of that wave of players that a young and very progressive and forward-thinking general manager out of the college ranks named Lou Lamoriello worked very, very hard to get out from under the Iron Curtain, including Slav Fetisov, Sergei Starkov, who was my nephew's hockey coach, by the way. And Alexander Simak. So, I mean, as a kid, you said you got started watching in 88, but like, as a kid, were you conscious of this sort of element of the Devils? Because it really is very interesting. And, you know, Lou, I mean, listen, he's been in the league for a billion years. He's done a million things. People kind of forget this, that he was very much at the forefront of this. He went over to Russia. He sat with these guys. He brought them over here. I mean, was that something you were conscious of even as a little kid, that like, wow, this is really kind of special that this team is doing this?
I was because Starkov and Fetisov both came at the same time. And yeah, it was like a really big deal. Like they were always photographed together. And I remember it being just a huge moment. Now, what I wasn't cognizant of was like the McGillney stuff that had happened a few years earlier with the defection. And I wasn't cognizant of obviously anything about Fetisov's role with the Russian Five and him being like an iconic player in Russia. Like I'm not one of these fucking Canadians that watches the Canada Cup on VHS every 2 days. I didn't quite understand it. So from that aspect, I was cognizant of it, but I wasn't really aware of the magnitude of it. But it wasn't just them. And then like Kasatonov showed up, and I remember it was a big deal because he and Fetisov had been like defensive partners in the USSR. And then, you know, I didn't really like match C-Mac to that group of defensemen really. But the fact that Lou was sort of importing all of these Russian players was definitely something that I was aware of as a kid.
And it's something we talk about a lot. We also talk about those Canadians who watched the 1972-70 Canada Cup and whatever.
Pretty sure half of those guys you just mentioned are on postage stamps right now in Canada, getting beaten by Canadian players in those.
They're all existing in service of Paul Henderson's Hall of Fame.
We won't name names, but there was a prominent Canadian hockey person who wondered if Matvei Michkov watched those games, because of course he was playing for the now he's playing for the Flyers, and if he understood the connection between the Flyers players and the 1972 Canada Cup teams, and if that's going to be on his mind.
Was he then asked about his opinion on the Tragically Hipped and how important Gord Downie was to the history of
exactly.
Yes.
Gord Downie, who famously not a Toronto Maple Leaf fan, so he's good at my books. So this is something we bring up a lot on our podcast about Lou and how he has this, I don't know, weird reputation that I think is kind of unearned, of being just an absolute, you know, old school dinosaur. Like the dude was basically lived a spy thriller. He was going across to the Soviet Union and holding meetings with Slava Fetisov and these guys in like hotel rooms. He had to make sure he wasn't being bugged. It's an incredible. I'm sure there's going to be books written about Lou that he's going to. It might be a short book because they're not going to reveal anything. But if there is a book to be written about him, it's this stuff that like him going over and kind of just like bridging the gap between these two countries during the Cold War. I mean, the Cold War was going on, and Lou's this guy from Providence is over there. Slava, why don't you come over? like this is crazy stuff. And Dan and I talk a lot. I've mentioned the story about Jordan Eberle. He was pissed that the Islanders left him exposed during the expansion draft, whatever. And then he was having trouble getting a work visa. And then the next morning, he got a phone call from Lou being like, Jordan, like I spoke to the governor, or it was the governor of Washington called him, yes, or something. And was like, you know, Lou called me, you're all set. Like, welcome to the Kraken. Like, this guy is not, it's not like he's in the, you know, it's the governor of Washington. He's getting these Russian players out of behind the iron wall. Like, this is, it's that insane stuff. And people just in our kind of the generation we're living in now just don't understand that this guy is, you might think the hockey that his teams are playing are boring, but he is about as far from boring as anybody in hockey can be.
Like, he was also, I remember, you know, he like was somebody who found ways to create loopholes for like the waiver draft.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they had to like rewrite the rules to prevent Lou from doing it again. He was the guy, well before the establishment of Robidoux Island, like Lou was the guy who found ways to make players literally just disappear.
Yeah.
He's kind of become, like you said, the butt of a lot of jokes about being out of touch and what have you. But, you know, before that, he was somebody who just not only would push the envelopes on the rules in the NHL, but also was so powerful that he helped make them. He was on all those like rules committees with Bettman and one of Bettman's most trusted like conciliaries, and like he'd make the rules and then find ways to break them. Like the Kovalchuk contract wasn't necessarily Lou's doing. I mean, that was definitely ownership pushing for it. Mm-hmm. But the irony of Lou circumventing the cap in the way that he did, while also helping to establish the cap, is still one of my favorite circular logic Lou things of all time.
It's the easiest way to break the rules is to make them first.
Make them first.
How to break them. Yeah. So Lou was, you know, ahead of the game in a lot of ways, especially back then. And he drafted Alexander Semak out of Russia in the 10th round, a round that doesn't exist anymore, in 1988, 207th overall. And he had played a number of years in Russia already with Moscow Dynamo and Salavat and a few other places. So he comes over. They drafted him in 1988, but he didn't make it over until 1991, plays 25 games, 5 goals, 11 points. But then in 92-93, he breaks out in a huge way, plays the entire season, 82 games, 37 goals, 42 assists for 79 points. Spoiler alert, he would not reach these highs again in his entire career. But that's absurd that this guy just showed up and just put up 37 goals and 79 points. And like, I mean, I was thinking about this before. The Devil's list of like, you know, goals in a season is kind of not that, you know, you've got Patrick Elias, right? Zach Parise. I mean, Alexander Semak has to be what, like third or fourth on the list, or like, you know, most highest scoring Devils in a season. Like, that's crazy.
They had a few great years. Like Gianta had a breakout year. Oh, right. And then, you know, obviously Jack Hughes last year had a 40 goal year. So like I think he's probably been bumped down the list a little bit in the last like 10 or 15 years. But, you know, for a while, like 37 goals from a Devils forward was insane. One of the reasons why I picked him is because of that season, because he was actually on a really, really good line with what was my favorite player growing up, which was Claude Lemieux. Like, Claude Lemieux was my guy. Anyone who's read me or followed me online should probably understand why. But like he was on a line with Claude Lemieux and Valeri Zalapukin, and in the great tradition of line names in the NHL, something we've certainly gotten away from in recent years, much to my chagrin, that line was christened probably by Stan Fischler, because he was always pretty handy with naming a line. The sizzle line. S for C-Mac, Z for Zelopukin, L for Lemieux. Sizzle wow. line was there the name go. Of that
That's
line.
That's definitely
that
those a guys are on.
Yeah, I know. You can just hear it now. The sizzle line.
And he probably said it to Lou once, and yeah. Lou probably just stared at him, was like, you know, in the intermission on like Sportsnet or something.
He's like, yeah, he's like, Lou, yeah. Lou, I've got the name Sizzle Line, and Lou was like, they are the second scoring line. They play behind John McClane's line, and that's why we call them the second scoring line.
What needed to cement it was if Stan and Claude had some kind of like intermission kind of rapport show like he used to have with Evgeny Nabokov, you know, and he could have been like, you know what your line is called? The sizzle line. And Claude would have been like, okay, I guess. I don't know what you want me to say. but that's pretty good. And you know, that line, like you said, that was a formative era for the Devils. That was 92, 93. Again, this guy breaks out in 37 goals, and you know, all of a sudden the Devils go from being like, yeah, they're okay, to like being, wow, these guys can really score. They obviously, you said, they have Stevens at this point. A young goalie named Marty Brodeur shows up the next year, and all of a sudden they are in the conference finals. They lost to the Rangers, but C-Mac's 93-94 season, he must have gotten hurt. He was only 54 games, 12 goals, 29 points, so a big drop off. The next year, the Devils would win the Cup. And if you're listening to this and you're like, well, I don't remember Alexander C-Mac being on that Devils Cup team, that's because he wasn't. He got traded to Tampa Bay in March of that year. So I must have been the deadline thereabouts. He gets traded to Tampa Bay for Danton Cole and Sean Chambers, who yeah. played a huge role, I remember, in that 95 Devils Cup run. Mm-hmm. I mean, you were a fan of C-Mac. You watched him on the line with your favorite player. Like, do you remember any kind of like feelings of, oh man, that really sucks that they gave up C-Mac, or were you just like, oh man, this Sean Chambers guy is awesome? who did we trade from? Oh, it doesn't matter, you know.
No, I think at that point it was pretty clear that like the page had been turned on C-Mac, and he wasn't going to really be much of a contributor. I remember I liked Ben Hankinson though, like he was your good sort of like bottom six forward. He's an agent now, by the way. But
that's
again,
where
like
name from
that. That deadline, though, like Sean Chambers shoring up the defense, and then the big one was Neil Bratton getting him from Minnesota. That was the huge game changer, because the Devils had struggled for years to find that veteran center to kind of bring it all together. They tried Bernie Nichols, they tried Peter Stastny, and they just needed to find that guy, and he ended up being the perfect player for that system that they were playing. To the point where now when I play, like I play, as everyone I'm sure has at some point, I play Devil's Numbers in Powerball and Mega Millions when the jackpot gets really big. I play 95 Devil's
winning
Numbers.
And winning.
I've never won. But Neil Broughton's number 9 is actually the number that I play as the Powerball or the Mega Millions, whatever number, because I always considered him to be like the thing that kind of like brought them to the next level and allowed them to win the Cup that year.
That's... How did you find out about the trade? It's, you know, I love thinking back to how
pre-internet
I found
days.
Out, yeah, I found out about, you know, Darren Van Impe getting traded to the Islanders or whatever. Either in like the newspaper in Newsday on like a, you know, small little corner of the paper, or you just turn on FSNY and like, oh shit, we got Darren Van Impe now, I guess. Where, how did that happen, and why didn't anybody tell me? Why isn't there a thing invented that can just tell me instantly if a player got traded to my team?
I mean, at that point, it had to have been like WFAN at that point is what I'm probably thinking. Like an bottom of the hour sports update where they give the hockey news within 35 seconds. And it was a trade deadline deal. So they're probably, you know, giving you what the Islanders, Rangers, and Devils all did at the deadline in those updates. So I'm imagining, you know, it was a 3-second mention by, you know, John Minko to let me know the Devils made a trade.
I remember waking up one day and opening Newsday to find out that the Islanders had traded both their goalies and drafted Rick DiPietro. And just being like, what the fuck? What is happening right now? Did I open like some kind of weird, it's like an almanac from the future? What's happening right now? So 95, he gets traded to Tampa Bay. He doesn't really do much there, 22 games. And at the end of the season, he is traded once again. And this is where the Islanders come in. They are about to be a very, very bad hockey team. They don't know that yet, but they're going to be. And they need a lot of help. And so Don Maloney, who was the general manager at the time, makes a trade. He sends a whopping fifth round pick in the 97 draft. So a pick 2 years later. Sent it to Tampa Bay to get C-Mac. And Mike Milbury was asked about this, and I found this quote. He said, we had a hole at center ice position for a while, and everyone knew it. Okay, fair enough. Then he says, at times, C-Mac has been a terrific player, and at times, he has been less than that. We'll have to see what he brings to us. Thanks, Mike. That's a really glowing a review of your new acquisition here. So, I mean, listen. I'm like you, I'm an Islanders fan, and I had no idea this guy played for the team until like years later. I'm like, wait, isn't that guy who played for the Devils? So I have no recollection of this trade whatsoever. Definitely no recollection of this quote, but he just shows up and all of a sudden he's like the team's second best center. He ends up having a 20 goal season. Like, this is what's so strange. He had 20 goals, 14 assists, 34 points in 69 games. That's a pretty darn good season. And I mean, that Islanders team, by the way, was led by Ziggy Palfy, who had 87 points. He had Travis Green at 70 points. Those are good numbers. And then you had Matthew Schneider at 47 points, Marty McInnes 46. This would have been a good team if not for the fact that their goalies were Tommy Soderstrom and Jamie McLennan, who I hope to get on the show one day, but we'll see. But this is a very strange thing to look at a guy and be like, well, those are really good numbers. And then look at the team and be like, oh my God, this was off. Now, this was also the Fisherman era, everything going wrong. Maloney would get fired. Milbury would be the GM. This is absolutely terrible. Your Devils are having a bad season as well, as you, I'm sure, remember. They did.
Yeah, one of the few, maybe the first team to ever win the cup and miss the playoffs the following season. I think that's the case.
So I'm not even going to bother to ask if you remember Alex C-Mac playing for the Islanders after his years with the Devils. But like, I mean, looking back at this now, how shocked are you to be like, wow, he was an Islander. And wow, that's a pretty good season for a guy who I just kind of went off your radar a year or so earlier.
Yeah, I definitely didn't remember him playing for the Islanders, because you have to remember that at that point I was in my, what would it be, like 7th or 8th month of orgasm. After the Devils won the Stanley Cup.
Right.
Should mention also, I don't think I brought this up when you were talking about the cup, that my dad and I were at game 4 when they when they beat Detroit. I actually got to see them win the cup. Because he famously won New Jersey lottery and then decided to use the money to buy Devils Stanley Cup tickets. And his logic was, since we were going to very much get our asses kicked by Detroit, he wanted to make sure that we at least got to go to a game that was going to happen. Yeah. So he had a choice of game 3 or game 4. He chose game 4, not realizing that it was actually the Devils that were going to pull off the sweep. And that's how he ended up with the game on his wedding anniversary, no less, by the way. Really. a whole different conversation. So I got to see the Devils win the cup and I was a super happy boy. Now, I had no idea that he was, you know, what happened to him after he was traded to Tampa. Did not realize he resurfaced in New York. Did not realize he had such a good season.
Yeah.
For the Islanders, no less. In your research, did you find any information as to with whom he was playing on the Islanders?
So I found a bunch of links and a video, and he was at least on a line at one point with Brett Lindros, who is absolutely going to get an episode of this show at some point.
Behind the Sharks' net. Sikora's got it there. Lindros steamrolls him. King has the puck. Derek King from behind the net. Lost it on a sweep check. Taken back. They score! C-Mock was able to wrap it around and pass Flaherty, and the Islanders, and their benches up, lead it 4-3.
Some good hustle by Derek King. You'll remember, Howie, he put that puck into the offensive zone on the seat of his pants, or from the seat of his pants. C-Mac, Lindros came around. There's a good check by Lindros. Derek King with some hustle. Stripped of the puck, and then C-Mac grabbed it. And a quick wraparound. I believe it went in off the goaltender, Wade Flaherty. But a quick move by C-Mac, and the Islanders have their goal back. It went off the right skate, I think.
He was on the power play, too, so that would have mean he would have played with Palfi and Clark at some point, too.
5-on-3, minute 20 to the power play overall. Alexander C-Mac to Schneider. Out now to McInnes. Schneider again. C-Mac to McInnes. Now to C-Mac, score! Gorgeous puck movement. It's 4-1 New York.
Most importantly for the Islanders is they get to celebrate with their fans. About the patience of some coaches, I suppose Larry Robinson, that's what his team talks about, the patience. But the Islanders had great patience in this power play. They weren't trying to get the first one in the first minute. They moved the puck well. They were playing it around on the perimeters. Look at the beautiful passing play. Alexander C-Mac to Marty McInnes returned, and C-Mac put it away, and the Islanders have a 4-1 lead.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. But I mean, it's Mike Milbury. So lines mean nothing. Lines mean nothing. Contracts mean nothing. Nothing mean, players mean nothing. They're just gone. I'm surprised he made it through a whole season without getting traded to Anaheim or something, or Hartford.
Seriously.
You know?
Seriously.
So it's pretty impressive. But yeah, no, he played all over. He played with Brett Lindros. They had a scoring. He scored a goal, I should say, against San Jose. He actually helped the Islanders win a game in Winnipeg by blocking a shot and then coming in on a 2-on-1 with somebody else, I forget who, to score a goal and make it give the Islanders a 4-2 lead.
Anderson can't clear the pinch by Quint. Kachuk knocked down. Schneider smacks it around the boards. Anderson leans into Quint. 7:14 to go in the third. 3-2 New York. Again, the Islanders can't clear. Darren Quint's drive blocked by C-Mac. Now C-Mac squirts past Quint over the line. He has help. C-Mac fires. He scores! Alexander C-Mac has given the Islanders a 4-2 lead.
You just had to have a feeling about it all. It was all the Winnipeg Jets. They were buzzing. They were buzzing. But the Islanders, they were playing a good, cautious game in their own end of the ice. Nobody was making a big mistake. That wasn't allowing the Winnipeg Jets to get a scoring chance. First time they break it, Alexander C-Mac comes down the ice. You see what happens. The Islanders now have a 2-goal lead.
And it's funny because, like, I'm telling you these goals, these big moments this guy had and all this stuff. This season went absolutely nowhere. This was an absolutely terrible team. They finished 22-50-10. 22-50-10. That's awful. 54 points. I don't know how they had that many. And
the good thing was you finish second to last in the NHL and you got a guy like Mike Milbury at the helm. You know he's going to make sure that second overall pick is going to be a banger.
You're definitely set up for the future with Mike Milbury at the helm. But he was a pretty good player. And again, I'm looking at this roster and it's really not that bad. I mean, the Islanders would have had way worse teams than this, you know, 5 years later. But man, their goaltending just—they could not get a save.
I'm looking at the goaltending right now, and so they had an 880 save percentage, and that was the fourth worst in the league.
Yeah, I was
the San Jose Sharks had an 869 save percentage that season.
They gave up like the seventh most shots too, because I'm like, oh, they probably gave up a lot of shots. No, not really. All things considered, but yeah, Tommy Soderstrom played 51 games. 51. Well, he won 11 of them.
So, yeah, you look, but their goaltending contingent was better than two weird Islanders on the Sharks. Chris Terreri. With Chris Terreri, I don't remember Chris Terreri, who's, I think, on the Islanders coaching staff being a Shark. And then Wade Flaherty was in. Right. It was a four-headed monster. Yeah. Obviously, Urbe, Tommy Soderstrom walked so Arturs Urbe could run in terms of equipment.
The Sharks for a while had some weird Devils cast-offs. Like John McClane famously was traded there after he complained about his ice time, I think, on a game day or some such, or his contract or something. And then Lou like put him on the next plane to Alameda.
Did Lou give him the orchestra speech? that, you know, yeah. We need, you know, are you a drummer or are you a violinist? If you want to be a violinist, that could, or is that,
I don't
only
know how
Kentenico?
The Sharks team was that bad, man. They, yeah. I mean, they look like they have had some talent. They must have just not, you know, it must have yeah. been a weird shooting percentage year for them or something.
Well, they didn't have Mike Milbury at the helm. Yeah, that's obviously the key. But yeah, this team was going nowhere. But individually, some of them had some pretty good seasons, including C-Mac. It's funny you mentioned Wade Flaherty because he's the guy who C-Mac beat with a wraparound in that San Jose game. I was kind of hoping it was Nabokov, but it wasn't. But yeah, so it's pretty wild. So, I mean, again, a very nice 69 games for a very terrible Islanders team. He finishes with 20 goals, and that would be it. He would be left unprotected in the next year's waiver draft. We have an episode coming up about Chris Osgood, and we get into the waiver draft there. But the waiver draft giveth and taketh away, and in this case, it tooketh away Alexander C-Mac. And again, we get another classic Milbury quote. Milbury was asked why C-Mac was not among the 18 skaters and two goalies the Islanders protected, quote, because he was driving everyone nuts. He doesn't distribute the puck. He plays his own game on his own time. End quote.
Wow.
So, yeah, brutal, brutal. So he ends up playing 18 completely meaningless games with the 97 Canucks.
The most Frank Costanza quote that Mowbray may have ever given.
He was driving everyone nuts.
Yeah, exactly. You could read it. This is another kind of thing to remember here for current Islander fans and maybe those who didn't live through the Mike times is like, what on what planet would Lou Lamoriello ever say this? He'd just be, why did you leave C-Mac off the protected list? It was just his time. Yeah. Next question.
Internal
decision. Not even that. Yeah, it would be like, you know, era we had to protect 12 forwards, four defensemen, and one goaltender per National Hockey League rules. When we decided to tabulate how many forwards we could keep, there were some forwards that we could not keep.
Oh, my God. That's
it.
Yeah.
Well, Garth Snow would have said it was a numbers game. It's a numbers game. What do you mean, Garth? It's just a numbers game.
It's a numbers game. AKA, I can't find two pennies to rub together right now.
Right. Well, it's funny you mentioned that because elsewhere in this same New York Times story, it says that by losing C-Mac's $735,000 salary, he was able to save money. And the reason that there was a swap there was because the Islanders made a pick in that waiver draft. And Greg, we can throw it right back to you because that pick was former Devil Jim Dowd, who is not only just a Devil, but a New Jersey native as well. Do you have any, we'll throw a little bonus weird Islander in here. Did you have any idea Jim Dowd was an Islander on top of being a Devil?
No, but he was pretty well traveled, I think, after the Devils. Yes. And the two most famous things about Jim Dowd, first New Jersey born player to play for the Devils. Mm-hmm. His name may still remain on the sign outside of Brick, New Jersey, Brick Township, New Jersey, as having been with the Devils. Second thing is, like, he was sort of the platoon center with Sergei Brelin on the Devils Cup team. It was like him and Brelin. It was a real Wally Backman, Tim Tuffle situation, if we're going way back. Right. I remember that him and Brelin kind of splitting time a little bit in that spot on the Devils. But yeah, most famously, the first New Jersey-born New Jersey Devil.
That's pretty cool. Don't feel bad about not remembering he was an Islander because it lasted all of three games on the island for Jim Dowd. Did spend a lot of time in the IHL playing for the Utah Grizzlies, coached by our pal Butch Goring. So there you go. Yeah. Thus ends the Jim Dowd chapter of this episode. So now back to Alex C-Mac. So yeah, spends 18 games with the Canucks, another bad team at that era. And then after that, it was to the IHL, surprisingly. Won a Turner Cup with the Chicago Wolves, won a playoff MVP trophy with the Wolves. This was, again, before they were an AHL team. This was when back in the old International Hockey League days. Then he played for the Devils AHL team again, which is kind of an interesting turn. And then he left North America altogether. He played in Germany, and obviously went back to Russia and finished there.
Now, hold up a second here. We're missing a team here.
Oh, okay.
He according to HockeyDB, Alexander C-Mac played for the Las Vegas Thunder. Las Vegas Thunder, a very famous IHL team that was really one of your better Island of Misfit Toys type IHL teams. So to give you a sense of what the fuck was happening here, the assistant coach was Clint Malarchuk. Okay.
Wow.
Amongst the players that were on this roster that Alexander Cimak played 13 games on, Kerry Huffman, Sergei Zoltok,
wow.
Brent Gretzky, Pavel Dimitra, okay.
Wow.
Isn't Radek Bonk? I remember there's a picture of Radek Bonk in a Las yep. Vegas Thunder jersey.
Ruslan Soley, Red Light Rasico was on the roster. And then Clint Malarchuk apparently played 3 games and was also an assistant coach. A little Reg Dunlop wow. action for Clint Malarchuk with this team. I know, yeah. So
that's crazy. That's yeah. amazing. There you go. That's a pretty wild group of players there playing out of Las Vegas as well. That's pretty funny. Jeez. Yeah. But yeah, Alex Cimak. I'm sure I called him Alexander Semin a second ago. But yeah, Alex Cimak played on. Oh, Robert Domé, also another 90s classic right there. And Jason Doig, former Ranger. How about that?
Jason yeah. Doig. Wow.
Oh, you missed a Devils legend. Sasha Lakovic played 10 games.
Oh, my 10 God. 10
games.
Yeah.
81 penalty minutes 81 penalty in 10 minutes. Games. That's Sasha Lakovic.
That
Sasha
checks the out.
They used to call him. Yeah,
I would love to know total minutes played on ice by Sasha Lakovic on that team.
Not many. And after 10 games, like, all right, you need to go away because somebody's going to get hurt. It's like in Batman Begins. I don't need protection. No protection for them. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
so, yeah. So that is the strange case of Alex Cimak. Great. One season wonder for the Devils, great one season wonder for the Islanders, and a whole lot of weirdness in between.
Just your classic, like post 88, pre 94 Devil, where they were throwing everything at the wall to see if they could level up as a franchise. None of it really stuck until, you know, 94 when, you know, they were wearing the red and black. And now, like you said, Brodeur's there, Niedermeyer's there, Stevens, Danico. Lemieux, Richer, like they now they're starting to form that core that goes on to win the cup the next season. But alas, Alexander Cimak, I almost said Semin. Alexander Cimak was not part of that core.
There you go. One last fun fact: he had one hat trick in his career while playing for the Devils, and guess who it was against?
The Islanders.
You got
oh
it.
My God! Full circle
moment. Okay, we are just beginning the NHL season. Have you got a chance to watch were you at the Islanders Devils game the other day? And if you've had a chance to watch them, what do you think so far? It's been some good, some not so good. It's early, but what's your kind of takeaway on the Islanders right now?
I watched a little of that game on TV. I was not at that game, but. You know, like you said, it's super early, which is good news because you assume that Sorokin probably won't have these numbers for the rest of the season. but, you know, the thing I was really curious about with the Islanders was what was going to be the ultimate impact of now having Bo Horvat for a full season. And like, so far, so good. I mean, you know, he's played 4 games. He's got 3 points as we do the show and has looked pretty good in doing so, leading the team in shots, which is also a good sign because I think shot volume was one of the real reasons he popped in those couple of years with the Canucks. So, you know, this season was kind of going to live or die based on whether or not the additional scoring he gives the lineup can kind of push them over the edge offensively a little bit, because I think they're, you know, clearly an offensively challenged team. So, you know, that's the only positive things going forward. And you know what the goaltending is going to give you. So, right. Once again, I mean, they're a team that you expect will be hovering in the wild card picture probably more than anything else. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then you got to be pretty happy if you're the Islanders, because I don't think they're necessarily a team built to, like, win a division.
No, we don't want to win any divisions. We want to just come in and crash the party at the end there. You'll be happy to know that the reason Bo Horvat, his real name is Bowie, by the way, named after David Bowie. So the reason that Bowie Horvat is often running the season is he was fully indoctrinated into Long Island culture over the summer. Because he got served a lawsuit for illegally amassing a landfill on his property that he was constructing. So he got a NIMBY lawsuit thrown at him over the summer. So he's a true Long Islander now. When you're dealing with NIMBY issues like that, you be like, oh, this is heaven, baby. This is what it's all about.
See, I thought you were going to tell me that he was spotted washing his Camaro in the driveway. But that also probably
No, that stuff. That's like Miami stuff. This is Long Island stuff. His kids are enrolled in the schools. Yeah. He got a lawsuit, and you know, you see him drinking a coffee, walking the streets of Garden City, or
you're
something.
This is Miami stuff, buddy. I didn't say what year that Camaro was.
The Islanders have been together for so long that Mike and I refer to them as the uncles, because everybody's kids know every other guy as Uncle whatever. So like Cal Clutterbuck's kids know Matt Martin as Uncle Matt, and Anders Lee's kids know Brock Nelson as Uncle Brock, that kind of thing. So Bo Horvat is an uncle. He's absolutely an uncle. He's got the look. He's got the lawsuits down. He's definitely an uncle as of right now.
While I've got you, like, can you explain to me why, outside of the answer being it's Lou, there's so much stasis on a roster that was unsuccessful? Like, I'm seriously like the only thing I can come up with is that he refuses to believe that the thing that he's built is inferior. And it's just like doubling and tripling and quadrupling down on it with a little Pierre Engvall thrown in for good measure.
You're like, great.
Sure, he's great. But like, is it that is there belief amongst Islanders fans that this roster can be better than it is? Or is it just like Lou's blind loyalty to his own creations that this roster remains unchanged, although unsuccessful?
My theory is a very simple one, so it's probably wrong, but I think it's not so much a blind faith amongst Islanders fans or Lou. I think it's a faith amongst the players. Like, they have just been together for so long that they just don't want to change. I mean, this is the running gag, right? Nobody wants to, no free agent out in his right mind is ever going to just sign with the Islanders. Yes. Okay. Andrew Ladd, fine, but we don't talk about him, but like, nobody's going to come here and sign willingly. But yet when they get here, nobody ever leaves, right? It's like Hotel California, right? I think it was Merrick's line. So I think these players, they believe that they can win. And so they just sign here forever, I guess. And I mean, why Lou hasn't kind of, you know, got on board with like, well, some of you guys are going to need to go. I have absolutely no idea. But, you know, this is probably the last year for that fourth line. And if that's true, because two of them are UFAs, then that's going to be a whole different look for them next year with a whole different fourth line. I mean, you might as well change the whole team around.
I don't know, man. I feel like we've had this. They've been UFAs before, and they end up coming back on like contracts. It's wild.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think for the most part, most Islander fans are more optimistic than the people off the island. Because like, if you look when they added Horvat last year,
is it like, Stockholm syndrome or
it could be, but they played at a really good clip. Like, they were a 104 point pace team over their last 30 games last season with Horvat and without Barzal. So like, just getting watching Matt Barzal play with another player who's really good at hockey is eye opening stuff for us.
Yeah.
Like, it is eye opening. Like, Bo Horvat made like a very simple cross ice pass to him against the Coyotes the other night. And I was trying to think of, I don't even think Jordan Eberle makes that pass, because Eberle was a little bit of a different player than Horvat. But I was like, I don't think anybody Matt Barzal's played with could have made that pass where he just cut two defensemen out of the play with a cross ice pass that was just on Barzal's tape. I think it surprised Barzal how good the pass was. So,
and sometimes that's all you need for like someone to level up their game. I mean, look at Detroit right now. Like Dylan Larkin is watching Alex DeBrincat and being like, holy shit, people can do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. We're seeing some of that with Barzal. And I also don't get me wrong. I mean, you do yourself a favor and look back at like the 2015-16 Islanders and see how many of those players are still around. Like, it's unbelievable. It's
absurd.
Yeah. But at the same time, the team is a little different from what we saw last year, especially in the beginning of the year. Like, Engvall, for people in Toronto are like, oh God, take this guy. Like, he doesn't go into the corners. He doesn't hit anybody. I was like, buddy, we have 30 people in this organization who do that nonstop. Like, you go to the coffee shop and Casey Cizikas is ramming somebody into the glass. Like, we don't need any more of that. We don't need any more. We got, give us that guy. Give us the handsome tall guy with the great shot and the speed. And he might, you know, check out of a play every once in a while. I don't care. I'd love to watch that because I think we all know, like, Matt Martin and Casey Cizikas, those guys aren't going to take a shift off, but on their shifts that they are on, they're not going to be able to do the stuff that Engvall does. So I do think that there is a little bit of it's not a different team, because frankly, at this point, I want Lou to just keep lumping 7 years at these guys, because maybe it is a little Stockholm syndrome. I love them all to death. Dan said they're the uncles. I feel like they are part of my family at this point. When they've been around this long, like, how could they not be? And they're very likable, nice dudes. And, you know, Brock Nelson is my daughter's godfather. He doesn't know it. She doesn't know it. Like, but he is, like, this kind of stuff. Like, I also don't want to see them blow it up without them winning. And it's romantic. It's like, because they're good enough to make the playoffs and, like, maybe go on a run. So keep doing it. Like, it's fun. I'm having a blast watching. We've had a lot of fun watching this team over the past since their old captain left. So just keep doing it, Lou. Stick around for as long as you want.
I do like this roster, but if I got to watch this power play suck the life out of them every game a couple of times, I'm going to go out there and strangle somebody. So that's all I got to say. That to me is the biggest thing. Like, keeping the guys around, because the 5-on-5, they're still pretty good, but how John McClain, he's already fired. That's the thing. Lou has fired John McClain like at least twice and traded him and he still can't get rid of him as a power play coach. I don't understand. That makes less sense to me than keeping, Pierre Engvall for 7 years. Like, I
also think we have a different version of Lou than you guys got. Yeah, like, obviously, I mean, it doesn't really land on people like how amazing it is that there's an 81-year-old general manager in a professional sports league here in North America. Mm-hmm. But like, he's not like that ruthless kind of, you know, fire the coach with a couple games left in the season.
He's mellowed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, he's just not that Lou anymore.
There was a time. And again, like, it's amazing to think about Lou's career and how many people that like have come across him as Toronto fans or Islanders fans don't understand the history of it. But like, there were times when Lou would, you know, fire a coach a season in New Jersey, and then more often than not, name himself the coach.
Yeah.
Now, he wasn't like good at it, but he just decided the best thing to do is to literally scare the shit out of the players by having the guy that signs their contracts behind the bench.
That he coached the Devils in the meaningless game for you guys against the Islanders, where, you know, the Wade Dublowitz game.
Yes.
And he made the great decision of starting Scott Clemenson. I swear to God, we talked about those Canadians earlier. I've watched that game a million times on YouTube, and there's a TSN version of it where James Duthie and a panel go around asking if it was outside the spirit of the game for Lou to dress Clemenson, because had the Islanders won that game, it would eliminate the Maple Leafs. Mm. And Marty Brodeur had played 78 games that season, and the game was meaningless. And they were like, you know, is this right? Is Lou doing the right by the league and the Toronto Maple Leafs here by dressing the backup goalie, even though it's a meaningless game? Like, Jesus Christ.
What did it mean for the Leafs? Unbelievable.
Exactly, the ultimate one. But, and to, in that same vein, talking about Mike Milbury, I guess Mike Milbury is like doing his best to just like copy Lou. Cause when Milbury would fire the coach and then name himself as the coach, it didn't scare the players. I think they just were like, can we get away from, can I get traded? Like, can you get me out of this fucking place?
And there was that one time where Lou named himself the coach, but then also named Adam Oates.
Yes.
Yes.
Like the other coaches. He's like, you know, I'm much too busy for this. So you're going to coach the offense and then you're going to coach the defensive side of the hockey game while I stand there and look menacingly at the players.
Yeah. Right. Didn't work out too well. Worked out about as well as Mike Milbury coming to coach the Islanders once every season and a half. So, Mike and I talk about this all the time. Like, the Islanders are the outlier in every way. They are the only team that like values defense over everything else. They have built from the goalie out, and they are run by a guy who just doesn't follow any sort of guidelines other than his own. It's weird. And
yes, you know, it's weird that he's painted as like the generic, you know, hockey man, milquetoast hockey man, when he is literally the definition of like the outlier. There's one team in the league that makes its players shave They're the unique one in that situation. By definition, they're the unique team.
Yeah, very weird. But anyway, Greg, I hope you've had fun. It's been great having you on. It's frankly a little surreal after listening to years and years of your podcast to have you on one of ours. But it's been a pleasure. And I hope you've had a lot of fun walking down a very strange memory lane that I don't think you expected to go on anytime soon.
No, it's my pleasure. I love doing podcasts. I'm happy to do this one. I wound up working out time-wise. My problem is that there's always like a time during the year when I'm like, I go on Twitter or whatever. I'm like, I want to do your podcast. Let me know how I can go on your podcast. And I get like 50 people being like, come on our podcast. Then I'm like, oh shit, this is actually going to take time, isn't it? instead of playing Fortnite or, you know, watching like reruns of Bar Rescue, I have to go and then like talk about these things on these podcasts. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy. I love doing them. That's my point. I'm terrible with time management, but since it just worked out time wise, I was more than happy to hop on and especially I love the concept of the pod. So I was happy to hop on and do it.
Well, we will reach out to you again and we'll try and find some other ex-devils for you to come on. And
yeah, you want to talk about Marek Zidlitsky?
Oh, yeah. He was on the list, too.
He's there.
Another great one season Islander.
He was great for the Islanders.
So for those that I'm going to plug away for a second, for those who don't know, I still do stuff on the Puck Soup Patreon. I do like a couple of different podcasts with the boys that do involve hockey. I do Mizanpod. I do the OUFL, which is an overrated, underrated podcast every month with like a special guest. I write a couple things each month there, too. So if you're interested in all that stuff, it's just go to Patreon, look for Puck Soup, and you can check out what we have there. And then I got a podcast again, actual hockey podcast called The Drop with my buddy Arda O'Cal. It's on the NHL and ESPN podcast feed. And that's Tuesdays and Thursdays is when that show drops. We're also on YouTube in case you really want to watch two white guys on a Zoom call talk about hockey.
Arda. Yeah, I met Arda at the NHL fantasy draft thing at the NHL offices, and it's going to sound weird to say this, but he probably will let you know, but all anyone could talk about at that gathering was how good he smelled. He had like this he had this cologne on that was like discontinued and you can't find it anywhere anymore. Wow. So he bought it up, and all people were like, people had to like stop down the show and be like, Arda, I can't like focus because you smell so good, man.
He's a really good smelling man. He's also well put together. Like, yes, his suit game is on point. He's like you. He and I get along a lot because like we both work our asses off, and we both love hockey and wrestling and video games and Star Wars.
You love Star Wars. I remember him.
And then also we both look like Zelensky. Like, that's the other thing too about The Drop. That's fun. Is like, when we do when the show is like put on YouTube, there inevitably will be a comment from somebody being like, why do you both look like Zelensky, the Ukrainian president? And then I'm like, well, I'm actually Ukrainian. I can't speak for this Turkish guy over here, but like, that's my excuse.
Well, now what you guys got to do is get Zelensky on to guest as a guest, and you could ask him about, you know, how the Canucks are faring this season under Rick Tocchet.
I would love that. I understand the man's a little busy. Plus, yeah, there's always the chance that if you got all of us together on something, it would be like that scene in Time Cop where the two people meet from different timelines and then just like melt into a pile of goo, cellular glue, for having disrupted the time. Like, all the clones can't be in the same place, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Man, we have covered a lot in this episode. White Castle, Alex C-Mac, Lou Lamoriello, and now Time Cop. The Jean-Claude Van Damme classic. That is a full program, folks. And thank you, Greg, so much for coming on. We really, really appreciate it. And we will get you on again, or we will bother Arda and get him on and ask him what his cologne is. Michael Leboff, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read and listen to his work at Action Network. Any final thoughts on Alex C-Mac, the early 90s Devils, White Castle, Jean-Claude Van Damme, whatever's on your mind? Let's wrap it up.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I guess we didn't talk about is that he was really, really small. Like he was like, like the NHL was very big at that point, like Lindros and Mario and people like that. And he was listed at 5'10", which was, I think, generous. Yeah. So that was also kind of an anomalous thing about him, is like he was a little tiny man playing center, like a little Russian Corey Millen skating out there.
5'10" in hockey terms is 5'8". So that's how it works.
He was a wee little thing. Yeah.
Right.
No matter what, in my head, whenever anyone talks about an NHL player being small, like to me, the smallest player in NHL history is Serge Breland. Like I just, for some reason, I always think of Sergei Breland being like almost hilariously small skating around on the ice.
And yet Nathan Gerby fit in his pocket.
Wow. I always thought Nathan Gerby would be an Islander, and he has not been yet.
He might have been. You just didn't see him.
Yeah, that's also true. Yeah, and he definitely scored 100 goals against the Islanders.
Him and Yuri Tulusli, if they just played against the Islanders, he'd be in the Hall of Fame by now.
For sure. All right. Well, thank you all very much for listening. We really, really appreciate it. We'll be back with a whole bunch of new Islanders, Weird Islanders this season. Can't wait. We've already recorded a bunch, and we can't wait to roll them out. Make sure to sign up at patreon.com/islandersanxiety for ad-free episodes and bonus content. Follow us at Islanders Anxiety Pod. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Our theme music is Knuckles by Bjorn Falk. Listen to more of his music at Bandcamp and Spotify. Read Lighthouse Hockey. Shop VintageIceHockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. Check out FansFirstSports.com. And until next time, keep the Islanders weird. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.